All right, great to have you back with us as we get ready for Giants baseball today. Alex Wood, Julio Urias, Bruce Jenkins, good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, Marty. Doing well, thanks.
Very good. Well, first of all, congratulations are in order to you, and people should understand. Bruce is one of the three nominees for the Baseball Writers Excellence Award, that Hall of Fame award, for next year. So, Bruce, you, John Lowe, and Jerry Fraley are the three nominees, and you know what we think, so how about that?
In the words of our mutual friend Bill Madden of the New York Daily News, what a thing!
Yeah, that's right.
I was going to say, I talked to John Lowe like the next day, and we both agreed, whatever happens from here on out, you know, all good. You know, we really don't care. We've got months to be grateful to be nominated like this, and however it turns out, I think I'm pretty much of a long shot, but it was very cool. I was really thrilled by it.
Well, it's a big deal, and people should understand it's that Hall of Fame award, Nick Peters and Leonard Coppin and Bob Stevens and so many more illustrious writers of baseball have been honored since this award was put in at Cooperstown. So we're thrilled for you. We are thrilled for you, and we want to win. This is not show up and get an orange slice and a trophy. We want to win this. So
I appreciate that, Marty, very much.
All right. Well, today, coincidentally, in Cooperstown, that award is being given out for baseball writing excellence. Used to be the old J.G. Taylor Spink Award before they figured out what his political background was. Mm-hmm. Is Tim Kirchin. How about that?
Oh my goodness. Last year I learned that I didn't quite make the three-person ballot, and I'd lost out to Tim Kirchin, and I thought, of course I've lost out to Tim Kirchin. I mean, talk about a perfect Hall of Famer. These tributes that are coming through, they show him at Cooperstown, and players are gathered around him, and he's posing with, you know, Peter Gammons and Jason Stark and Rosenthal and everybody writing these fantastic tributes, and they're all true. I mean, he's a very good friend of mine. I've known him since the late 80s when he was covering the Orioles, and just an absolute prince of a human being. And he's a little guy. He describes himself as being 4 feet tall, but he's a little taller than that. And he's a hell of an athlete. He played a lot of baseball, second base, and he's a flat-out tremendous basketball player. I'm telling you, he could walk into any gym pickup game. I don't care if there's NBA guys in it, and not disgrace himself. He obviously wouldn't look like the NBA players. But he's a phenomenal dribbler and shooter, so quite a guy. I can't think of a better person to be honored like this.
Absolutely. I'm so glad for him, the passion for baseball, just like you. So good for Tim, and we're going to keep our fingers crossed for you for next year. All right, let's talk a little Dodger-Giant baseball. Bruce, these two games are excruciating. They're losses for the Giants, but boy, it has every twist and turn you could ask for in a baseball game.
Well, they've been really good games, and you know the Giants are competitive, which they have to be. I mean, you know, the division thing is gone. They're 14 and a half out. That's not going to happen. They're not going to pull a 1951 on the Dodgers. But you know, it's just a shame to see the defensive mistakes. They come up just far too often, and I really fear that they're not going to stop. I mean, last night it was Wade, and you know, Long threw a very costly wild pitch that Barb really had no chance to handle, and it just happens every night. You know, the night before, Gonzalez loses the ball in right field, and there's a phantom throw to second base, and you can't have it. Cannot have this. Can't win baseball. Can't win baseball games when you kick the ball away, and they do it routinely. And it'll change when Crawford and Belt, if they come back and their legs are sound and they're who they're supposed to be, it'll change. But you know, until then, way too many defensive mediocre players defensively.
Yeah, and there was a moment Andy Baggerly and I talked about it when he was on earlier in the game last night. And you know, Gabe Kapler went to the analytical side and said, "All right, I'm going to pull Brandon Belt in front of 50,000. He's our guy, but I'm pulling him because they brought Vesia in. My God, we better put up VR." A right-handed hitter who's gotten a few hits off lefties, and it didn't work out, but I thought it was a very important moment, the way that game was handled.
Well, yeah, it really was. I mean, I don't make that move. I mean, without looking at the numbers, you know that Belt's has looked overmatched a lot of times against righties and lefties this year. It hasn't been a good year for him. He doesn't have his knees, and he's not the belt that we remember. So to hit for him in certain situations, or to bench him for a right-hand hitter in some games, I could understand. But in this situation, you know, like you say, he's one of your guys. He's Brandon Belt. You know, you don't to bring up VR, who's played like 10 minutes in the big leagues, that just strikes me as wrong. I don't care who's on the mound. I think Belt deserved a shot there, and he said something to that effect, like, there are times when these things make sense and there are times when it doesn't, which is kind of a telling remark. But he stood up for himself, which was great. I mean, but this is how the Giants do it, and they don't they don't play on emotion too often with these things, and there are times when it could really come under serious question.
Well, there's still one game out of the wild card, and as you say, we don't see 1951 here or the 78 Yankee Red Sox race over this next couple of months. It's just not realistic with the type of team they have. But just get in. And it is a three-game series, and they're only one game behind St. Louis and Philadelphia. So the trade deadline is coming up, and it made me think about it last night. Of course, the big name we'll talk about in a second, but really what they need, bullpen guys. And they could use a left-handed reliever, Bruce, because McGee is gone and Alvarez is gone. And I could be wrong, but I think we're talking about Sam Long and Garcia as your left-handed relievers, and I think that's been a big problem for the ball club.
That's absolutely the number one priority, and you're right, it is about right now, because they do have a shot at the postseason. You know, they're up against the Phillies and the Cardinals in this wild card. They're all virtually tied, more or less, and you know, the Phillies got routed by the Cubs yesterday, and Wainwright got shelled, and the Cardinals gave up 9 runs to the whoever they were playing. And you know, those teams are vulnerable too. I don't think they're going to run away from the Giants. So, you know, that's right now, exactly. You realize that with Long out there, there's really nobody, you know, behind him in this situation. And I like Long, in essence. He's got a lot of talent, but, you know, in the late innings of a close game at Dodger Stadium, I don't know, maybe not.
Well, the Bellinger thing is really a problem. And look, this guy is 5-for-73 against the Giants over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And the only thing he can hit is something where you slow his bat down and give his bat a chance to do it. And you and I have talked about it. You throw this guy high heat, high fastballs. He can't get around. We saw it last night. And they had to get cute with him, just like Duvall got cute with him in the playoff, and try to trick him. And you don't have to trick him. You could throw it by him. And that was a big moment for me last night. And I think it just goes to show you there's a little bit too much thinking going on right now.
Well, I really heard that it was 0-2. I mean, there's no excuse for hanging a curveball there. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things you could do. You could buzz him up high and maybe he'll chase because he's down to his last strike, or, you know, a slider that, you know, radically low and away, maybe he chases that. But, you know, you certainly don't groove one, and I'm sure that wasn't his intent, but the result speaks for itself. And it was a cake pitch for him, and he didn't miss.
Boy, interesting. All right, so that's Dodgers-Giants, and two more games coming up, Wood and Urias today. All right, let's talk trade deadline a little bit, because it's important to win games now during these couple of weeks. And, of course, the Dodgers 15-2 in July. The Giants are 8-11. And here they are a couple of weeks away from about 10 days away from the trade deadline. Juan Soto. And, boy, talk shows had a ball with this all week, because Washington said, well, we're thinking about trading him. And then the debate started, what should the Giants do? Where do you stand on this?
I'm in favor of getting Soto. You know, there's talk about Webb being involved, and that part stops me a little bit. You know, to have a homegrown pitcher who's that good, it's so precious, and it's something Rodon is gone next year, so I just, if they could trade for Soto without losing Webb, I would love it, because they do that and keep Webb, and they're in the playoffs. They win the wild card if they do that.
Mm. See, my feeling is I would trade Webb. He pitches every fifth day, And you're getting the young Ted Williams, who's going to play 162 for you for two full years and part of this year. And you are in playoff contention this year. And the way the Giants do it, they find players. Look, they just signed Rosenthal for, you know, the rest of the year, hoping that he'll be okay. Matthew Boyd, they find players to fill in. But this is a generational player, and I would trade a pitcher for a big hitter, and that's how I feel about it. If it took Webb and Harrison, Harrison's never made a major league pitch, and boy, if they like that, I would jump at it.
Well, I totally see your point. I mean, let's just say Webb, you know, all of a sudden he's got the dreaded forearm strain, you know, next year, and next thing you know, he's getting surgery, and 10 years from now, we're looking back and we're saying, wait a minute. They didn't trade Logan Webb to get Soto.
Right.
And my theory is shot right out the window. I just wonder, you know, if they really would have enough starting pitching if they get rid of Webb next season. You're right. They do find guys. They find the Cobbs and the Alex Woods. But Webb is he's an elite pitcher, so it's definitely worth an argument. I'll tell you one thing. I think they would have to offer Webb in the deal, because I don't think that, you know, the Nationals are getting ready or preparing to get blown away if they're going to do this. And without a name that really jumps out at him, I think, you know, Luciano and Harrison are interesting, but, you know, they haven't played in the big league, so I don't know if the Giants would have enough without Webb. So it's a heck of a good argument. If they do get him, I'm certainly not going to grouse and complain, I'll tell you that.
No, come on. And plus, the franchise needs something like this.
Oh,
and the
absolutely.
Other guy, look, the other guy we talk about, and who knows what he's going to do, and that's Aaron Judge. I mean, you know, you can dream and say, hey, we made the trade for Soto, and we're going to sign, you know, for $350 million for 7 years. We're going to sign Judge, who's now got 36 home runs. Can you imagine, you know, looking forward to 2023, and there's Judge on one side and Soto on the other? Come on.
You know, it's funny is that they could do it.
Yes, it's not impossible. Yes.
They've got the money to buy Judge, and they could trade for Soto. I mean, good grief. That's just insane, but it's possible.
Yeah, it's not I say it's not impossible, and it is possible. Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see what happens. This is going to be an interesting 10 days to see what people do, because it should be active, at least for relief pitching, I'll tell you that. There's a lot of teams. Yankees lost one of their top relievers. Everybody's looking for relief pitching, too. So we'll see. What do you think of the All-Star game? You know, it went on for a couple of days with the Home Run Derby and the game itself. What was your reaction?
I always like the All-Star game. I'm not too nitpicky about it. One thing that's a little bit bothersome, although you understand it, is that every inning there's a new pitcher out there. He's got like a zero ERA and he throws 130 miles an hour. And then the next guy comes in, but he's a lefty, not a righty. He's that guy. And you're trying to get some hits against these guys. And I was just thinking back, and I did a little research and put it in tomorrow's paper. I mean, a lot of us remember the All-Star game was for pitchers going three innings. I mean, that was the standard. When the game first started, it was routine to see six pitchers total, 3-3-3 and 3-3-3. And all the way up to really the late 80s, you'd see guys going three innings. And I love that. First of all, you get a look at the guys that you really want to see. You want to see the Koufaxes ahead of the relief pitchers, or the Scherzers ahead of, I can't even remember the name of the Arizona guy, but Johnny Multiply. you want to see these guys. You know, however, on the flip side, you get more guys in the game. I mean, guys don't want to travel to the game and leave their families when they could be, you know, gone fishing or whatever and not play. So I definitely get everybody getting into the game. But, you know, the relievers are whoever they are, whether they're starters or relievers coming in, they're fresh. They know they're going to go one inning. They're gonna unleash the arsenal, and you get a game like that where long periods go by without any scoring. I thought the mic'd up thing worked pretty well. You know, it's just an All-Star game; it's kind of fun. Mm-hmm. Some of the guys were really good. That doesn't bother me so much. And you know, the Home Run Derby was great. I see Julio Rodriguez got scratched today with a sore wrist, which is very troubling. Because that kid is—he's one of the shining lights of the game right now, one of the great young players for Seattle, big reason they won 14 in a row. And maybe it's just, you know, a little bit sore from taking all those swings, but Well, it's a lot of fun. Pete Alonso, when you're back there bench pressing, 8,000 pounds, and then just like meditating, you've gone a little too far with this thing. just get up there and swing. Don't think. Jock Peterson's my guy. I would love to see him in there.
Yeah, and Soto won the thing, and that was fun to see.
Well, go ahead.
Something I liked. I like the umpire being mic'd. I like to, maybe it was the catcher being mic'd and we heard the umpire making the calls, but outside, inside, up, down.
Yeah, absolutely.
I really like that, and I think they should do that all the time. All the time. The umpire.
Yeah, that would be great. It could get a little dicey when, it's obviously a terrible call in a situation with a lot of people's money on the line in the playoffs, but... I think in general it's very instructive just to have him participating back there and let you know. I mean, it's really actually pretty clear that whatever it is inside or low and away, but I don't mind him being part of the dialogue, at least at times.
Yeah, no, I like – and they got lucky with Trevino. He was terrific. Manoah, that was good, and I think they should do more of it. It was an exhibition game. But if you can do it in some way, I guess you can't really do it in a regular season game. I don't think the catcher's going to be explaining, what the strategy is going to be for a hitter. But it was fun. I tell you honestly, I had fun with it.
Regular season guys can fall out of the mood real quick on doing this thing.
Yeah. But, well, something matters.
Yeah, it was great, though. I mean, Manoah was a really good example. This is the guy the Giants – passed on drafting him. They took Hunter Bishop right after him. This guy's a phenomenal pitcher, and he weighed like 300 pounds when he was a kid, and he was nobody knew about him, and he suddenly lost all this weight and became this pitcher that Kevin Gausman raves about. And you go, who is this guy? Well, now he's talking to you on the mound, and he was very engaged and funny, and you know a little bit about him. These are precious bits of information we get.
I thought it was terrific. It made the game for me, the Kershaw-Ohtani moment, and it
absolutely.
Was 3-2. The Stanton home run was huge. He crushed it. Buxton took a pitch over his head and knocked it out. Goldschmidt, I thought that for as miserable as these games have been, I thought it was decent. I really did.
It was, and another factor, playing in Dodger Stadium in the twilight, there's no difference between this one and 1980. I mean, I was shocked that any runs were scored in the early innings. That also makes it tough to hit, but I'm with you. I mean, it's the best players, it's fun, and it's a treat. It's the best All-Star game. It always has been.
Yeah, it was good. I thought they were very successful with it. All right, a historical moment today. I love this one, Bruce. 1964. Campy Campaneris, who I firmly believe should be in the Hall of Fame. The other A's have eclipsed him, and he didn't get the play. But first game in the big leagues, two homers in his first game, one off Jim Cott, who's going to be a Hall of Famer tomorrow. And the only other person to do it was Bob Niemann for the old St. Louis Browns, who became a very well-respected scout for the Giants. But how about Campy? Campy, two homers his first game.
Oh, geez. And you're thinking, man, this guy packs a lot of punch. And he really did. He hit 22 homers one year. But actually, that was the only year he ever got into double figures. He only hit two more homers that first year, 64. He hit two in his first game and then two more the rest of the season. So, but then again, he walked off Mike Cuellar with a home run in 73.
I saw it.
Remember that?
I remember it. Oh, I was there.
The Baltimore playoffs. This huge home run off Cuellar.
11th inning.
Really interesting guy. I mean, he was ambidextrous. He came up in semi-pro ball. He was a catcher. That's one reason they let him play all nine positions in a game, which he did.
Right.
But you know what? Bob Niemann, Mark, this is an amazing thing. Bob Niemann, as you know, played for a lot of teams in the 50s. Good slugger. Decent ball player. Not great, but he finished with the 62 Giants. That was his last season. Yeah. He did some things. He went 9-for-30, okay, and he gets on the World Series roster. Now he comes in. What game was that? It was game 4, Yankee Stadium. This is only at bat in the World Series. He comes up as a pinch hitter for Ed Bailey in the 7th, and he's intentionally walked. So that's his line. That's his World Series line. Intentionally walked. That's it. Career on base percentage 1,000. But that was the inning when Chuck Hiller hit the grand slam. Uh-huh. But they pinch ran for Niemann with Ernie Bowman. So Bob Niemann didn't get to cross the plate on Hiller Slam or have any kind of batting average, but he did appear.
I love it. Everything is so connected, and boy, can't be two homers and Bob Niemann as well. Good stuff, Brad. Bruce has good research. You're a Hall of Famer.
Anytime you can research Bob Niemann, you're having a terrific day.
Very good. All right, terrific. Well, let's enjoy the game today, and we'll talk tomorrow morning. Talk more about the Hall of Fame tomorrow with Minnie Minoso, Jim Cotta, Leva, Big Poppy, Gil Hodges, and things like that. So look forward to it.
Thanks, Marty. You bet.
Right, thanks, Bruce. All right. More coming up. John Miller, the Hall of Famer, is going to join me next. A wonderful conversation. I'm looking forward to it. And then Hall of Famer Jim Cott is going to be on with us, and we've got much more coming up on The Sports Leader.